Well, it's time for In the Chains, the UK-based podcast for amateur disc golfers. Get ready for course reviews, disc reviews, and the latest news and updates from the disc golf world. Your hosts will also talk about their own progression and have a lot of fun along the way. And now, here they are, two Brits and one Yang. Let's get started.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to In the Chains, your favorite disc golf podcast. My name is Dennis, and I'm your favorite American. And with me are my two favorite Brits, the Nutters to my Butters. The Nutter to my Butter, Nutter Butter Bars.
You guys, this is getting terrible. We don't have a clue what you're on about.
A Nutter Butter is like this, you would call it a...
Britzel.
No. Am I explaining it or are you explaining it?
I was just having a go.
It is a...
A cereal bar.
It's a cookie. It's a cookie with peanut butter. It's almost like an Oreo, but it looks like a peanut, and it's peanut flavored. It's like peanut butter inside. It's a Nutter Butter.
It's a biscuit.
A biscuit.
Like I said, it's a cookie.
A biscuit. Yeah, yeah. What is it with Americans and peanut butter?
I love peanut butter.
Oh, no, it's horrible.
What?
Right, on toast, you can't bake it.
Oh, man, some Jif chunky peanut butter, and then some strawberry jelly. Ooh, boy.
Jif make bleach over here, mate.
Nope, Jif makes, like, I think the big competition is, like, Jif and Peter Pan are the two companies, and Jif is the way to go.
I'll tell you what you want. Marmite. That's what you want on your toast.
No, Vegemite. Vegemite's even better
than
Marmite.
Why would I want either of that crap? I do want to try it. I will try it. However,
mate, it's beautiful. Ugh. It's beautiful.
I have Vegemite on toast every day for breakfast.
Oh, I love it. I do.
And you can even get Marmite peanut butter now.
Why are we talking about food when we are a disc golf podcast?
I know. You're moaning that we've got a busy show.
We have such a busy show today. Oh my God. So for those of you that are listening, we have a set schedule of how long we're allowed to talk about things. And we never, ever, ever stay on time. We always go over.
We go over by about half hour every week.
Yeah, we do. So we do have a great show for you guys today. Like always, we're going to bring you the news, or Bowen's bringing you the news. We're going to talk about the big tournament that happened in the States. We're going to talk about the big tournament that happened here, as well as talk about how Duffy and I did in that tournament. But yeah, that's basically it. And then, of course... we have a special guest today. We interviewed London Disc Golf Community, and we were able to talk to Ollie Simonson and Ryan Gardner, one of their sponsor players. And so we have a great interview, but that's coming a little bit later. But first, what did we do this week? Like, what were your guys' highlights of the week?
Well, the tournament was a highlight, I would say. We had, but we went up on Saturday as well, didn't we, to have a little bit of a practice, and we met up with... Josh Birmingham and Connor, Mahale, as he likes to be known. and we had a bit of a practice round. We had Josh shit talking us, didn't we, all week?
Yeah, yeah. The professional saying that, oh, I can woof those amateurs' asses. Yeah, you can one on one. But you put Duffy and I on the same team, it's a different story.
We agreed beforehand, and he was still shit-talking, so he was still happy with this decision, that he was going to give us five shots, and me and you were going to play doubles best shot.
Yep, and it was a fun round. Like, that was our second round that day. Josh, Connor, and then Gary O'Malley came. It was me, Duffy, and another American. So we were all there. Weather was beautiful. It was our first time meeting Connor and Gary, so it was nice to meet new disc golfers and play, and it was a lot of fun. And yes, Josh said he was going to give us five strokes.
Did you win?
Yeah, we did. It was close. Josh
closer than it should have been.
Closer than it should have been. So Josh is
compared to how well we did to begin with.
Yeah, Josh is a really, really good player. So is Connor and so is Gary. So we started off and through 11 holes we were 6 strokes up. So even without the 5 that Josh gave us,
gained a stroke.
We were still 1 stroke up. Like, we were doing pretty decent between the us. Yes, it was best shot doubles against Josh by himself. However, we get the hole 12, and Josh is a bit of a smartass, and quite rightly. So he walks up and goes, "Man, I didn't think it was going to be this difficult. All right, I got to step up my game." Gets on to 12, throws a P2, and aces it.
Is that the first one on top of the hill in the special section? Yeah,
in the special. Like,
I didn't know what to call it. The offshoot.
Yeah. So he aces 12.
And you knew it was in from letting go. Oh, yeah.
And Duffy and I look at each other and went, "Oh, shit." That was my first ace that I've ever witnessed. And even though, like, it was against us, the amount of joy that we had just watching that happen was amazing. We were all high-fiving each other and COVID-hugging each other. It was amazing.
Nice. Well done, Josh.
And then we messed up on 13, and he got another couple strokes back. And I think it was, like, going into 15 or something like that. We were 1 stroke up. And all we had to do was hold them off for like 3 holes. And we prevailed, right? The good guys won.
And, the good guys.
If you want to.
The fans' favorite.
The fans' favorite one. and so Josh had to do a little forfeit challenge. So check out his Instagram and his Facebook status, and he will let you all know how much better he is than us, even though he did lose. So I don't really think he got the point of what he was supposed to do.
It was a good little rhyme, though.
It was. But that happens when you're a musician, though, right?
Yeah.
So
One memorable thing for me was one of Connor's shots on hole 3. I don't know if you remember it, Dennis. He played like a little flex line out in, so there's like a small gap between the cricket nets and the tree before the hole, the big tree.
Yeah, those bottom trees on the left.
And he threw like a flex shot out in between that gap and sort of parked it. It was about, I don't know, about 5 foot away. It's just phenomenal how much power he could generate.
And of course, he's a left-hander. He's an ultimate player. The kid's got some power.
Yeah,
Josh absolutely has power. A lot of people that we saw play this weekend has some power.
Yeah, it did make you think, fucking hell, we're quite a way away.
I've got a proposition for you.
Oh, I'm sure
me and Josh versus you two.
I'm sure you do.
I think he'd rather just give us the 5 shots again.
We get a 10-shot advantage, me and Josh versus you two.
He's just messaged me, said, "No, actually, I'm all right. I can't make it that weekend."
No, it was fun. It was great getting out there, doing the practice rounds, seeing how people who are a lot better than us actually play that course. Now we are a long way away from what they do. However, we chose a lot of the same lines that they do. We don't have the power, or the accuracy, or the
finesse. You're finding that, aren't you?
We're getting there. I think
it's made me go back to the drawing board on a couple of things to.
I like playing with the people that are better because it makes me step up my own game, right? It makes me take it more serious. And we'll talk
about it. Don't fucking work for me.
Yeah. That's why he likes playing with me.
Yeah, exactly. that's not a lie. That is a true statement. Duffy.
But the thing is, we're all amateurs. We're all rookies. We're new to it. It's good to have experienced players to learn off, isn't it?
Just quickly, Bowen, how much of the other players did you see when you played a few weeks ago?
Well, I wasn't allowed to interact with people. What do you mean?
Why? No, lockdown one.
Yeah, we weren't really allowed to interact with other people, so we had to stick with our groups for this. It was pre.
Yeah, but surely you see other people's shots and stuff like that?
Not really, because you concentrate on your own game. I watched Mike Sharkey, and he's a decent player.
Because I was just wondering how much you see of other people, because it really made me think, fucking hell, I've got such a long way to go.
Yeah, I saw shots flying low, flat and long. And
for
thinking,
miles.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Miles.
Like, flat as a pancake, just like it had to hit something like a bank or something to stop them, because they were just carrying on going. And you think, jeez, some people have got so much power, it's unreal.
But then I threw one of them with my Justice on the long par 4.
Yeah.
And it went over the bank because there was just no stopping it. It just carried on going and probably ended up in Coventry.
Yeah, but that's what happens when you throw a full power 30 feet from the basket.
Yeah, that's true.
I think we all those players that we looked up to this weekend and when Bowen played, you know, they all started somewhere as well, right? They were once where we are now. It does give us hope. But yeah, so that's kind of what we did. That was my main focus this week, was getting ready for the tournament at Bedford. Bowen.
Bedworth. You say Bedford every week.
Do I really?
It's a completely Bedworth. Different place.
Sorry. You know what? I'm tired. I know of a place called Bedfordshire, which is upstairs.
That's different to Bedworth.
I know, that's upstairs where I go to sleep. Whatever. I can play the dumb American role all I want, and it works for me, okay?
What did I do? I played a round on the short course at Quarry Park, scored 3 under, which I was quite happy about.
74 over.
3 under, yeah.
3 under, that's not bad.
So that was all right, and I played a round at Redditch where I scored even, so that's nice. Not too bad either.
Nice, no, that's awesome. That's
they're easy courses, though, so there
we go. But you know what? It doesn't matter if it's easy or hard. If you played good golf, you played good golf, so good job.
I'm so much more confident than when I was again at Bedworth. It's amazing, so yeah. It's one of them.
That's good. We'll talk about the tournament here in a moment. Bowen, it's news time, and you got a lot of news. So
we've got a lot of news, so we're going to rattle through. Right, the Quarry Park Open and the amateur event have had 160 people. I had 140 in my notes. It's actually 160 people sign up. And the places have now been selected. Duffy and Dennis are doing the 2-day event and I'm doing the 1-day event. So we got spread across both events. And that's probably the highlight of the season for me, that is. My favourite course, middle of the year. It's hopefully going to be warm for me in May. It's going to be a great event.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun.
A new event that was announced today on Tuesday is the Creeksea Crusher, and that's on the 1st of May. It's currently open to women and juniors first, and then it'll open to men afterwards. I like the way that they're getting priority access for women and juniors. I think that's good. If you want more info, find it on the British Disc Golf Facebook page.
They don't have long to get the applicants in and before the tournament, do they?
No. I thought that.
That's going to be good going.
Is that PDGA sanctioned and BDGA sanctioned for points, or is that just a pop-up tournament?
This is fresh, new, hot news.
Hot off the presses.
I'll come back to you.
When he says hot news, that means...
I don't know.
I don't have a fucking clue. Stop asking me these questions. The Arrow Valley Disc Club inaugural event for their 10-event series/league has been announced. It's the Arrow Valley Classic, and it will be coming to you on the 12th of May. If you're lucky as well, you might get to meet one of the members of the podcast there. So I'm not going to tell anyone who it is, but one of us will be there. So it'd be good to see other people there.
Bowen, is it you?
Yeah, it's me.
I've signed up for it as well, so hopefully...
Oh, you're in it as well, Duff. Yeah, Dennis, got to get on it.
I'm an enigma.
He's Bowen, not sure.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Is it free?
Yeah. So it's... if you sign up to Early Bird, which I've got into, it's £30 and you get all 10 competitions for free. I'm not sure about the ones away. You may have to pay green fees for the away ones, but you get the Redditch ones all free. But it's £6 per event if you're not signed up. So if you're planning on doing more than 5, sign up for the Early Bird if it's still available. So that's the way to do it.
Especially if you're local, it's a good little thing because
it's a small. It's going to be good, but it's not PDGA. It's like one of the grassroots tournaments that the BDGA we're talking about. It's to get people involved. They're a good group of lads and girls down there. I play with them fairly regularly now. It's a nice little built club that's building there.
Cool.
Good deal.
Right.
All right, the news that everybody wants to hear. What are the results for Bedworthford?
Okay, so Bedworthford. MPO. I don't know, he's done it again. Now, 15 under he scored over the two rounds was James Luton.
He shot a 10 under on the first round, which tied the course record. And not only did he tie...
Did he hold the course record?
He already held the course record. But 17 and 18, he had birdie looks on both of those to break the course record.
And the pressure got to him.
He bottled it. He did a Dennis.
No, he didn't. Not even close to pulling a Dennis.
10 under, some shooting, isn't it?
It was amazing to watch. I was lucky enough to be on his card. That was awesome.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's some going. He came in first at 15 under. Connor McHale.
It's like
you're a little closer this week, mate. You came in at 13 under, two behind. So well done to you.
Miles away at two behind the leader.
Miles.
He was right.
Couldn't even catch him.
He was four away. The last one. Four away is. I'm not disputing. It's a great. It's a great effort. It's an amazing effort. But. Two shots behind is a lot closer than four.
Yes, and guess what?
If he was one shot behind,
he'd be even closer.
I know. I've heard some feedback, and I'm taking it on board. Well done, Connor. Mahale, there we go. I'm going to call him friend of the show, Josh. Josh Birmingham, six under. And that rounds up the podium for places for MPO.
Very nice. Yeah, so, everybody played well. I know some people were disappointed, but still good showing.
Yeah. I've seen Josh wasn't overly happy, but then he birdied, was it the last eight or something?
Yeah, he had a pretty decent back nine.
Yeah. In the FPO, we had Sue Underwood at 17 over, and Sean Lee in second at 23 over.
Good shooting.
In the pro 40s, there was only ever going to be one winner for the men, wasn't there? It was Derek Robbins. I'm sorry, everyone.
Who's sucking up now?
Well, yeah, I suppose. It was he came in 9 under, which would have got him third place in the MPO if he wanted to do that. So, well done, Derek. We had Steve Edwards at 19 over in the amateur 40s. In the intermediate, so the MA2, we had Ian McNidder at 2 under. Well done.
Just a quick one on that. I was speaking to Nids after the tournament. And
what's his name? Nid? You call him Nids, do you?
Nids, yeah. Oh, we're on. Are you nicknames? Yeah. Okay. And I think his score from the Bedworth Breakdown 1, part 1.
Breakout.
We are the worst journalists ever.
Yes. You know, everybody knows what I mean. He shot, it's 27 or 29 shots better over the two rounds. And I think he finished last in MA2, the first tournament.
And then he's come first.
And then won the second one. Yeah. Mental, isn't it? But fair play.
That's what I'll do at my next event.
Yeah, I reckon you might be right.
In the FA2, the women... It was Neve Timms came in at 30 over. I had to put a hyphenated version of that name because I was going to get that wrong.
That's like...
MA3, Ben Coyle came first with 5 over. We had Duffy finish in 6 in that category, but we'll move on from that because we're going to discuss it in a minute. And MA4, we had Jason McNeese at 3 over win it. Which is a hot round, or a hot couple of rounds, and then Dennis came in fifth. Yeah, Dennis came in fifth, which we'll discuss in a minute. And juniors, we had Peter Dowse with 53 over, so well done to the junior.
Well done, you beat Owen as well.
Just a quick one on that as well. Peter was on my first card, and he played so well. Honestly, I can't tell you how well he played for a young kid. He was, I'd guess it may be 11 or 12, but I didn't ask his age. But I'm telling you, Bowen, he was so accurate every single shot.
Was he?
Yeah, really good. I mean, he parred 18, the hole that we started on.
Nice. And you've got the Mandos there.
You've got the double Mando.
Not the Mandos, you've got have you got a Mando?
Yeah, you got the double Mando at the start. You got... Like
Bush, OB left,
Bush is right, and it's just straight down, straight underneath the basket and like about a 5 foot putt. And like he, the whole round, he was phenomenal. Blew me away. Did really well.
Nice. Well done. Well,
since we're talking about Duffy, how did your tournament go?
Mediocre. I had a round that I had a good round. Second round, I shot 6 over, which is about where I wanted to. If you remember from last week, where I wanted to sort of score. My first round wasn't so good. I shot a 10 over. There was one hole in particular, which was hole 7, which cost me. I think I four putted, and it, that you take out. If I would have parred that, I'd have been down at sort of 7 over, and that was, again, that was where I wanted to be. So it was only really that one hole that sort of cost me.
You did say that if you'd score 5 or 6, it was perhaps overachieving a little bit though as well, didn't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, 5's probably stretching. 7 or 8 is probably what I wanted, really. So
you averaged that over the two,
roughly. Yeah. So I'm pretty all right about it. Second tournament. Stuff to learn.
Moving up a category.
Moving up a category as well. I played with the guy who came in second on my first card as well, and he was pretty good, Terry. He was a decent player. You could tell he was methodical. His shots were, he didn't make many mistakes, and that's what it boiled down to, really, I think. But I enjoyed it. It was really, like Dennis said, the weather was brilliant. All weekend, really, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was just nice to see everybody, really.
Nice. But what about you, Dennis?
All right,
how
moving
did you
on.
Feel?
So it's time. No, I played like shit.
Hang on. He says moving on as if it's like a drastically terrible score, but it's not.
No, he played well. No,
so it really isn't. I don't think
I played above my rating. Yay. Here's the issue, everybody. Friends of the shows, listeners, partners, everybody. I have very high expectations of myself. I hold myself to a certain standard, and having been and done some practice rounds at Bedworth and being able to shoot 3 over and 5 over, that was my goal, my expected score. Round 1, I was doing pretty good. After 9 holes, I was 1 over. I was lucky enough to be on the same card as James Luton, as well as Adam from Ace. So after 4 holes, I was tied with the British champion. Felt really good about that. I did get a bogey on 5. It's not the end of the world. It's kind of, you know, not expected, but it happens. So after 9 holes, I was like 1 over. And then I ended the round at 11 over. So that means I went 10 over on the back 9. I could...
What went wrong? Anything in particular? Or?
My mind. I even went... Okay. After 11, I got a double bogey on 10 because I went out of bounds. I got a double bogey on 11 because I was in a bad position. Was in my head at that point a lot. I went to 12. I ended up birdieing 12. I parred 13. I think I parred 14. And then I couldn't make a 4 foot putt. And you guys have seen my putting. I think I'm okay. I was hitting the band. I was missing the chains from 4 feet away.
It can't have been 4 feet. That's just over a meter, Dennis. You'd have dropped it in.
I know.
Your arm's longer than that.
I'm not kidding.
You've got to be exaggerating a little.
Did you lose concentration?
Maybe 5 to 7 feet. Right. No more than 3 meters away. I was super close.
Did you lose concentration?
I don't know. I got in my head. And then once I'm in my head, I go downhill from there quickly. I was very distraught. I was not happy with myself. Almost embarrassed, simply because, you know, I feel like I need the validation of being able, you know, hosting the show with you guys, knowing, playing disc golf all the time, doing the things I do outside of the podcast that are disc golf related. I expected so much more of myself. So I was really down. I was almost ready to get in my car and just drive away. So a lot of people came and talked to me. For those of you that came and gave me uplifting words, thank you. I went into the second round not caring because there was no way I was going to win. And
what about those ones that took the piss?
Well, I like those people too. But I went into the second round. and I ended up shooting an 8 over. So all those holes that I messed up on the first round, because I started on the back nine, the second round, I cleaned up all those, parred those. I still made some mistakes around throughout the round, but I did a lot better. So it is what it is. Moving on to
what,
the next.
What one. Did you want to? Sorry to carry on. What did you want to score before the tournament?
I was looking to shoot 3 to 5 over per round. That was my goal. But I think what almost hurts a little bit worse, and Duffy was there. Duffy witnessed it. Duffy and I played a fun casual round after the tournament with some friends, and I ended up shooting a personal best. I shot a 2.
What was that personal best?
Yeah, 2 under.
Nice.
So that's from my round in the beginning of the day to the round of my end of the day. It was a 13-stroke swing. So I know it's in me. I know it's possible. I can do it. I just have to not put the pressure on myself in future tournaments. So that's
it. Treat it like a practice round.
Yeah, but this is what I mean about like what we're saying off air before the tournament, that you're not an MA4 player. Like shooting those sort of low scores like that, even what you were predicting, like 2 or 3 over, that is an MA4 standard. Which, like, I think you agree now, because you obviously you've stepped up, haven't you, for the future tournaments?
Yeah, other than Wembley, everything else will be MA3. I do think that's where I'm at. I just didn't show that, and I was embarrassed. But you know what? It is what it is. I've forgotten about it. I can move on. So, also want to mention, so many people came up to us and talked to us about In the Chains podcast. And told us they listen. Tons of people got minis. So for all you guys that listen regularly, thank you so much. Thank you for coming up to us and saying hi. We really do appreciate it. And for all you guys that listen, when you see us out on the course, please come up and say hi. We'd love to talk to you. I mean, even Sunday morning when we're trying to get a practice round in, we were ending up talking to everybody. And I told Duffy, I was like, dude, we have to go away. We have to hide somewhere just so we can get some practice in, because everybody came and talked to us, which was awesome. It felt great.
How many minis have we got left?
Enough. We're good.
So we still got a handful.
We're still good. Come see us. Come see us at Wembley. Come see us in Manchester and wherever else we're playing. We'll have some minis for you.
But and if from we don't, what I've been told as well, they are they're lucky. So that's you got to be desperate to get your hands on them.
Desperate, lucky. I didn't use one. I used my go-to mini. And anyways, so nobody wants to talk. Hear us talk. We're running way over time. Bowen, give us the results for Jonesboro, even though everybody already watched it. What we got?
Right. So Jonesboro, Ricky came first, and with a score of 35 under, and Calvin was his nearest competitor at 31 under. Eagle came in third at 28 under. So some good scores there. In FPO, Katrina Allen blew apart the competition, basically. She scored 23 under. She was hot all weekend.
It was on that Saturday was the one, wasn't it?
Saturday, was it a 57 she scored or something?
Yeah, like a 10, yeah, it was like low. A 10:40 rated round or something like that.
It was crazy. Paige came in second with 15 under, and Sarah Hocum came in third with 13 under.
Bowen, thank you so much for the news. Like always, so much information that you gather for us week in, week out. We do appreciate it. It's half the show, right? Us talking about the news is always half the show. But the other half of our show is this next part. So we were lucky enough to sit down with Ollie and Ryan from the London Disc Golf community. And we had a great chat with them talking about all things disc golf, as well as the Wembley tournament coming up this Saturday. So without further ado, here it is. All right, everybody. Like we promised you, we got Ollie and Ryan here from the London Disc Golf community. They're going to join us for a little bit and chat. What's up, guys? How you guys doing?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Yeah, really good.
Yeah, good, good. All right, so before we get in, why don't we have you guys tell us who you are? I know that everybody who listens probably knows one, maybe both of you. But yeah, tell us who you are.
Well, you should probably know who Ollie is. already. Seeing as you pretty much knows runs this. Everybody knows Ollie. Well, my name's Ryan. I play primarily out of Redditch, which is a very unknown area.
Well, we know.
You guys, me and Duffy know. We've all played together. There's only Dennis I haven't played with so far. So we'll
you're not missing out.
We'll get something in at some point.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but I play out of Redditch mainly. Pretty good area for disc golf, to be fair. Just outside of Quarry Park, Bedworth. We got the little course in Redditch. That's pretty much it for me, really. I started playing first lockdown and haven't put a disc down since.
Oh, nice. So you've been playing about the same sort of time as this then?
Yeah. I got into it about the same time as you guys, I think.
Oh, cool. That's good.
And you're lucky because, just like us, I feel like we're in the heartland of UK golf, right? There's so many courses within an hour to 45 minutes of us. It's really the prime location to be.
Definitely is.
All right, Ollie, I know everybody knows you, but who are you? What do you do?
I don't think everyone knows me, but you're very kind. I'm Ollie. I run London Disc Golf Community. I've been involved in the British disc golf scene since end of 2017. I picked up disc golf in Queenstown, New Zealand. I lived down there for two and a half years and got involved with disc golf there competitively. And it was a lot of fun. Played two rounds every single day and just a lot of fun. And now I'm based in London and running on supporting the course at Horsten Hill Activity Centre. And hopefully you'll be seeing a lot more of me there on a daily basis very, very soon. That's all I can say for now.
So is Horsten Hill, like, is that your main job, or do you have another set of income, stream of income, or is disc golf everything you do?
Well,
he's not going to give anything away, Dennis.
Asking the hard questions there, Dennis.
Hey, you know what? This
straight off the bat.
We're not amateur. Well, you know, some people have side jobs, right? I have a side job.
I guess I can give you guys the exclusive, if you like, because the truth is that, and Ryan probably doesn't know about this because I haven't told him, but the truth is that I handed my resignation in yesterday, and the plan is to do disc golf full time. And part of that will be running a ton of events at Horsten and Hill as my full-time job. So I'm planning at 10 events in addition to the Wembley Open at Horsten and Hill. I'm waiting approval from the BDJ and PDJ to go ahead with that. And then in addition to that, I'll be helping out the Horsten Hill Activity Centre, run corporate events, birthday parties, stag do's, hen do's, that kind of thing. And take green fees from there and just kind of push and promote disc golf locally.
Kept that quiet.
Nice.
That's the dream, isn't it?
That is the dream. Look at that. You're heard it here first, everybody. It's not what I meant. I didn't mean to out you like that. I was just wondering if, like, you know, you had another job, but awesome. Well, congratulations. That's a huge leap forward.
Thank you very much.
And I'm sure you're excited, also probably a little bit nervous and kind of...
All the feelings, all the buzzes. Yeah, it's lots of emotions, and it's scary, exciting, but I think it'll pay off in the long run. And I know that they've got a very supportive community of disc golfers that will come and support, and especially the new guys are keen to come and play events, and it's everyone's keen to play events. So come support the events, and while you're there, buy a disc and come support the London Disc Golf community.
Speaking of the London Disc Golf community, so what is it all about? Like, what is it, first off, and then what made you start it? Why did you start the community, start the shop, and have it expand to what it is now?
That's a very good question. London Disc Golf Community started end of 2017 with my friend Derek from America. We ran the Discraft Ace Race in Lloyd Park together with Croydon Disc Golf Club. That was my first event. And then I ran a Trilogy Challenge with Manchester Disc Golf in... June the next year, 2018, and then another Discraft event in Brighton. Then I ran a family fun day at Bedworth with Bedworth Disc Golf Club over Easter. And I ran a competition down in Basingstoke with those guys. So it started off with basically being me wanting to run and promote disc golf competitions. And I started my initial company, what was it, beginning of 2019. And the reality was that at that time, the sport wasn't big enough for only being able to run events. So I was never going to be able to generate enough money from running events alone to have a full-time job. And the reality was there was too many expenses for what was coming in from the events. So I decided to close the company down end of or beginning of 2020. In January 2020, and then literally in February and March, we got into lockdown, and then we saw the big boom of players come in, and we saw the sport explode, and kind of took off from there. And I was on furlough throughout the entire summer and was helping at Horsten and Hill, pushing, promoting the sport there, and eventually started to get my own disc golf shop. I was working with Ace Disc Golf to start with. They were putting some of my hats on their website. They were putting some of my merch on their website. So they were kind of helping me to get there. And then I eventually got my own shop. Through 2020, but in person only or through a spreadsheet. And then in November, it came online as an online shop. And now that's been running for 5 months, coming up 6 months, and it's doing really well. And I'm hoping that now, with the boom of disc golf continuing and pushing forward, with me being able to run multiple events and have the shop and got the team supporting, and got the Horsten Hill Activity Center supporting me, got Ladbroke Audio supporting me, and everything pushed me forward, and hopefully I'll be able to then be full-time in disc golf and help push the sport forward and get more people involved.
I mean, you must be doing pretty well, because giving 100% off all products a couple of weeks ago was really generous.
Well, we
wanted to do an April Fool's joke, but I don't know if you listened to the show. Dennis wouldn't allow us to. He didn't want to be part of it. He threw a little tantrum over it.
I was going to say, was the shop the final plan, or was it just something that evolved?
Well, originally it was all about events, and then the reality was that the shop was generating more money than the events. And typically in the entire history of disc golf, tournament directors do not make money on events, and it's kind of almost frowned upon for tournament directors to make money on events. And I'm not really afraid to change that and say, yes, I'm going to be more expensive than other events, and some of that money is going to go in my pocket to pay my wage. I'm not afraid to take that leap forward and push the sport forward, and hopefully people that play in my competitions would be able to tell the difference between other events. And obviously it helps that I have Horsten Hill Activity Center that's got a facility on site, and not every course has toilets and a shop and a bar and a car park and all that stuff. So in that way, we're very privileged to have that at the local course, but it is a pay-to-play facility, so you do get that with it as well. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
You had me at bar.
Yeah, I was going to say there's a bar. Did you say I have to drive?
I was going to say, did you say free bar, Ollie?
nah, buddy.
Never. I got to say, I like the idea of a tournament director getting paid. I'm not against it, simply because if you're doing the work and you're making a event more special and providing a lot of things and going out and using your time, then why not, right? You know, I'm all for it. If I have to, and this we talked about this last week, if I got to pay a little extra to make it worth my while, I'm okay with that. And I get it, not everybody will be, this ain't a free sport, right? We all know that. It's an inexpensive sport. However, it's not a free sport, and we have to remember that. I think the community here is still young enough where people will get upset about that. But if you are playing regular golf and you're in a tournament, guess what? People are making money because that's yeah. how it works. That is the society that we live in. And because especially now that it is your job, it is what you are focusing your time on, and you're trying to put out even more tournaments, then why the hell not? You know, and again, I would say as long as you don't, you know, take the piss and try to, you know, earn a, I don't know, $2,000 every tournament, okay, you know,
that, not, that's... Not only that, though. I mean, if Ollie starts putting the prices up to 50, 60 quid for a tournament, people aren't going to play, are they? So it's finding that balance of if people are happy with it, they'll pay it and all's good. But if Ollie starts taking the piss, then people will stop paying, won't they? So it's finding that happy medium of I can definitely see like yours and Dennis's point in terms of the sort of the effort that goes into it.
But then again, if he runs a 50 or 60 quid tournament and it's at that level, then absolutely people are, you know, because they're going to want to be a part of it.
That's what I mean. That's what I mean. I'm not setting that as a, sort of the price limit, but I'm just saying if the tournaments are worthwhile and worth the money, then people will pay it, won't they? So,
well, also now I'm in a fortunate position where there's arguably more demand than supply. Yeah. So events are selling out within seconds and minutes. Absolutely. So if an event is going to be £5 more than what it could be or should be, I don't think people are going to bat an eyelid because they just want to go play and sign up. So it's almost the perfect opportunity for me to be able to do this and see whether it works. And if in 6 months when the summer and season's over, it didn't really generate any money, I can get another job. And that doesn't mean I'm going to stop doing disc golf. It just means I'll have less time to do it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if my 10 events sell out, that's obviously going to be a big difference than if I have 20 or 30 or 40 people sign up in each event. It makes a huge difference. So
I don't think that you need to worry about not selling out this year.
Yeah.
With with what we've noticed with all the other tournaments that are starting to go up. I mean, like you said, they're selling out within minutes. It's really, really tough to get spots.
I truly believe that as well. And I'm in discussions now with the PDGA and the BDGA about having and being authorized to have those events. And I didn't actually realize that you have to ask their permission in order to run PDGA events, because there are certain rules in place that, again, you guys probably have no idea about. But for example, you can't have, technically speaking, you can't have two PDGA C tier events within 100 kilometers of each other.
Is that on one weekend, is it, or
on the same day? As an example, and with the BDGA tour, that's obviously another thing as well. But for this at this stage I'm just purely asking for PDGA sanctioning, and they are having a board meeting tomorrow, and they said they'll come back to me and see whether I need to change the dates or if it needs to get approved, or and they haven't really seen anyone say, hey, I'm going to run 10 events at the same venue in 1 year. That's never really happened before. But then again, we've never had COVID before, and we've never had this many players before. So again, you see Manchester at the Longford Open sell out straight away. You see the Bedworth events sell out straight away. And if there's an event at Quarry Park, which is just over 100 kilometers away from Horsenden Hill, they've got plenty of players locally that they can sell out of. Again, in London, there's 10 million people in London. I mean, come on. And again, there's other events. 100 kilometers is not that far away.
But it is for a small island like this.
Oh,
right?
Piss off.
No,
stop
no.
About the island.
Some states are as big as a country, though.
Fucking hell.
What I mean, God damn it, you guys are assholes. All right,
stop saying the same shit every week.
So what I mean, 100 kilometer radius covers a large area.
Yeah.
In an island that's this size, that probably covers 2/3 of the courses. So now you're saying...
No, No, absolutely not.
Is it a lot?
No, absolutely not. I did some research, and Quarry Park from here, from Horsenden Hill, is 88 miles, which is more than 100 kilometers. Like, Reading is within range. I think even, don't quote me on this, but I think, what's it called? Cotswold View might even be further, more than 100 kilometers away. Don't quote me on that one, but I think that's just the edge. So anything above Quarry Park, having a day on the same event on the same day as me, no problem. Obviously, a lot of the BDGA guys are based in Croydon, and that is within like 10 kilometers or 20 kilometers. So that's obviously different. But again, it's unlikely that we're going to have it on the same day. And if we do, we just change it slightly. And again, historically, there's been issues on having more than one event on the same weekend in the country. But again, that mentality has changed now, and we have a lot more players.
Is this all to stop gang warfare, basically? Should we be tucking like little handkerchiefs into our pockets to show which side we're on? Taking out the opposite gang members.
With your red hat or your blue hat.
No, I think we just... see how many people sign up to events, and just, I think the proof that the current events that have sold out within minutes is proof enough.
Yeah, definitely.
And again, I think there's no harm in opening it up. And again, all I'm asking for at this stage is PDGA sanctioning, not BDGA sanctioning. So I get that the BDGA tour might not specifically want 10 events at one location. Yeah. Fine, not a problem. But being PDGA rated and sanctioning, it's got nothing to do with the tour. So why wouldn't you do it? And the reason you wouldn't do it is if it clashes with other events. And again, it's these little technical things that I honestly didn't pay too much attention to, and I don't think anyone has until now. And I've just registered for my first two events on May the 15th and 29th of May. For one-day PDGA events, and you can go on the PDGA and you can click the boxes, fill out the form, and off you go. But it does actually say in the small print, I have spoken to my country PDGA coordinator and got approval from them to run the event. Mm-hmm. And I haven't read that and didn't know about that. And again, it wasn't relevant last year, but now I guess it's becoming more relevant. Yeah, it's just a nice to just bring it up in discussion that there is now a formal process of how it's going to work. And just crossing my fingers and really hope that I'm be able to run my events. And
I think you will. Obviously, you haven't listened to last week's show, but you know, we spoke to the BDGA. We had an hour-long discussion about what their plans were and where they're going forward. And one of the big things that they kept mentioning was the grassroots, right? Let's get more tournaments. We want more tournament directors. And here you are stepping up saying, hey, I will run tournaments. I want to run more tournaments. And yeah, this having 10 more tournaments, yeah, it's at the same location, but oh well.
The problem is, though, it stops people in Newcastle. Aren't going to be able to necessarily come down for 10 tournaments, are they? That's what they're trying to stop. So they don't want London-based people or people closer to London being able to pick up tour points easier than...
But again, I'm not talking about BDGA tour points.
That's what Dennis is...
There's nothing to stop you having one or two of your events BDGA is there? So you don't have to have them all, but if something could happen, you could have a couple.
Yeah, but it brings more tournaments, which more players will be able to play tournaments.
Yeah.
And that's the major cry right now is, hey, we want more tournaments. So I'm all for it. Well, Ryan, you've been quiet. So I got a question for you.
Go for it.
All right. So originally the question was you know, why start a team and have sponsored players? But my question to you is, what is it like to be a sponsored player? Like, what responsibility do you think you have? And how do you feel being sponsored by?
One thing I want to ask as well, just to add to that, is do you feel pressure going into tournaments more?
There's definitely more pressure now It's like when you're wearing your shirt, there's a target on your back always, but that pressure can push you forward. As far as playing in the team, it's great. All the other guys are really supportive. Ollie's always, we send him a video, critiques everything we do.
I can't believe that.
Out of love for us.
I can't believe that.
Out of love for us. He critiques our form. It's just helping us get better, really. Because I'm obviously the worst player on the team.
He critiques our podcast on a weekly basis as well.
That's true. That's very true.
Yeah, but other than that, it's just good to have a group of guys that you can talk to if whether things gone wrong, things gone right.
That's what it's all about, always, right? There. Being part of that team, part of that family.
Yeah.
And if you guys are there pushing each other to get better, it's going to make you better.
100%.
What have you got planned for the year then, Ryan? What's your sort of tournament plan and things?
As far as tournaments go, I need to sort of see when things are, because I'm getting married this year as well. Everything's a bit up in the air.
Ollie permitted that, has he?
I had this booked before that, so I didn't have a choice. That got pushed back because of COVID twice, so everything's a bit up in the air date wise, but that's all set now. So I just need to see which tournaments I can get to before and after.
Yeah. Which ones she'll let you go to?
Yes, which ones she'll let me go to?
Oh, no, hey,
she's getting into it as well now. No, she's just signed up for the ladies tournament at Quarry Park.
Oh, cool. Lovely.
So she got the last spot. So we've just got her PDGA registered and got her bag ready.
So she understands the addiction and the love, and she's right there. Yeah.
That makes it. She buys more than I do. Easier buying discs, doesn't it? When you got discs turning up every week, and you're like,
yeah.
"Well, how are you paying for that?" Well, at least you say, "Well, we can share these."
I was going to say, "Oh, does it?" Because they're biting over them all the time.
She's got her own set. I don't let her touch mine. I go in my bag and that's it.
What did you do to her the other week? Ulibarri one.
Oh, when the Tour Series disc came out and they were selling them on Ace, she had the, I think they called it the Lakers colours. It was like yellow and purple Paul Ulibarri Raptor. She had it in her basket ready to buy. And then as soon as she pressed pay, it was out of stock because I bought it 5 seconds before. So she's been angry at me since then.
And the wedding's still on, is it?
The wedding's still on, just about, yeah.
Great minds think alike, I say.
Yeah, stole it just for
that's
fun.
It. Well, are you going to be involved in the Arrow Valley League that's just been set up?
Yeah, people may not know Matt Wright. He's fairly new to the sport as well, but he's been doing tournaments in Ultimate for a while.
Competition winner, actually, from a few weeks ago, giveaway on this show.
Oh, yeah, he won the buzz. He showed us his Welsh dragon.
It's terrible. It's a great dive, but it's a terrible choice of disc.
Oh, I think it's all right. It looks really good.
It does look really good.
He's going to throw it as well, we've told him. Yes, that's right.
Discs are meant to be thrown. And if I die a disc, it's meant to be thrown, not to be showed off. Plus, it's not that good. So,
definitely.
Definitely get some dirt on it to hide all those flaws.
Or do us Englishmen a favour and lose it in the River Avon.
As for the Redditch Arrow Valley League, we've got the solo league running at the moment. We've got the new league's going to be starting up once the membership and everything goes live. We've got the early bird membership going at the moment. It's all ran through the Facebook, so if you search for Arrow Valley Disc Golf, it shows up on there. He's planned almost too many tournaments to count, but
more than Ollie. He's competing with Ollie.
So many.
Ryan, what's the difference between the Arrow Valley and the Redditch group? Is that the same thing, or
it's the same thing? But Matt sort of started the Arrow Valley one as his own sort of club, rather than.
Is it the same course or just
same course? Yeah.
Who's leading the solo league, Duffy?
Oh,
only just.
Yeah, for the time being.
I nearly had you yesterday.
I've had a couple of good scores on it. To be fair, I've had a couple of mediocre ones and a few good ones, so I'm pretty pleased so far. So I might not play again and just keep it at that. I've played enough now to say I've done enough to justify winning. but yeah, it's a nice course. Lucky to have it close to hand. And that's where I see you, wasn't it? I think I played on Saturday, played with your old man, I think, which I didn't know at the time.
He basically lives there.
We went about, I think me and Bone went at about 8 o'clock, and he'd been there for about 2 hours.
3 hours, yeah.
And then I see on the Facebook group that he hit his ace on hole two.
He did.
Congratulations if he is listening to that. That's pretty good.
He will be. I'll make sure he does.
I've come close a few times on hole two. It's a nice little just hoiser it in, but I've missed it by inches. But it's a nice hole.
Yeah, I've hit the cage and the band on that one. It just doesn't seem to go in for me.
No. I've got nowhere near it.
So speaking of competitiveness and rivalries, you guys as a team, do you have rivals? Are you super competitive with any of the other companies in the country or any other people? I really want to start some shit with between people. I think competitiveness is good. I think it's good for the sport. It definitely grows it. Everybody knows who my nemesis is. I've talked about him enough on this show. But do you guys feel the same way, or do you have like a friendly competition with other people in the country, especially the two other big companies that do what you do, Ollie?
I would say me personally, I speak more with the Ace Disc Golf guys than I do with Disc Golf UK. You want to ask about the rivalry? I would say more of a partnership. I speak with them more from a business side of point of view and get some advice with them. I speak with Disc Hub as well a lot. Again, more on the business side and seeing if I can help and push things forward. I spoke with Carol Finley yesterday for half an hour, just asking for advice about female divisions for my events. And with Disc Golf, with Ace Disc Golf, they've obviously got the team out and got all the uniforms, and they've been a long supporter of me personally and under Disc Golf community, and they've been at my events before. In terms of the rivalry, I think that will come more down to competing and playing. So I'm hoping that Ryan and Shane and Jack will get that a little bit more than myself. I think I'll honestly be a bit too busy to run events than to play events. And I think the rivalry comes down in when it comes to competing and playing, more so than the size of your business or whatever. So I think, Ryan, have you got someone that you'll be competing with?
My closest rival at the moment is another guy out of Redditch. His name's Mark. He'll probably be listening. I think Duff and Tom both know Mark as well. Yeah, nice, yeah.
Bidell, I call him.
Yeah, we sort of.
Bidell, yeah.
And Bowen took the piss out of me when I pronounced it like that.
No, he's a good guy. Nice chap. We play a lot, me and Mark. We played doubles against you and your mate.
Bennett, forget about him. I'll be there next time.
Oh, Christ.
you two against me and Mark.
Yeah, we'll play that. Best shot and it'll be just me going around. Bowen might as well carry my bag.
The worst shot was fun as well.
Yeah. With your shop, Ollie, you focus predominantly on latitude sort of, or trilogy discs. Is that because that's what you have sort of links with, or is that because that's what you like to throw? Is it a bit of both?
It's a good question. I started off playing with Innova discs, like most people do, I think. Then I started to throw a bit of Discraft, thanks to Steve Kornmuller, who used to run Essex Disc Golf. And then when it came to, I ran a few trilogy challenges, which made me really focus around trilogy, and also the fact that they are quote unquote local. Latitude 64 based in Sweden, Discraft and Innova based in America, and I wanted to support, again, quote unquote local businesses. So I chose Latitude 64. And they obviously run, they manufacture the discs for Latitude 64, Dynamic Discs and Westside Discs. So you get three different manufacturers from one supplier. And the relationship's been building over the last 3 years, really, really great. I ran a couple of Discraft Ace Race events, and it's not for any particular reason that the relationship didn't really develop, but it just kind of didn't. And I've reached out to them again recently and tried to get more discs, but not able to because they're struggling with demand so much, just like a lot of other manufacturers are. So they're trying to just fulfill the demand for the existing providers before they can branch out to other suppliers. But again, I can give you a little sneak preview that we will be getting another addition to the family. So we'll be getting some more discs from a new manufacturer. So we'll have Latitude 64 dynamic discs, Westside discs, and you'll have to wait to find out what that day is.
He's keeping quiet. Yeah, he's not saying anything.
Can't say anything yet.
I think I've got him there, though. I think I've got him. He didn't say no.
Obviously, I had a text in the week saying that I managed to get in a last-minute spot. Somebody must have pulled out of the Wembley Open. Dennis is playing the Wembley Open. He's been on it since forever. I think it's been put back more times than Ryan's wedding. What have we got to expect, Al?
Well, it's like you said, the registration opened on the 2nd of October, so more than 6 months ago. It sold out in 36 hours, which was ridiculous. And then it wasn't able to go ahead in beginning of November, I think it was originally scheduled for, because of lockdown. So we pushed it back to, I think, January, then we pushed it back to May. And then I managed to bring it forward a little bit to April because it was clashing with the women's event. Again, talking about having the same event on different days. So I changed it again to April the 24th, which is in, 10 days? 12, 11 days? Anyways. And there's been a lot of people that have changed divisions. There are a lot of people that have dropped out and then got waiting list people coming onto it. So there's been a lot of changes recently, and I'm hoping that, I think tomorrow, I've told everyone by email that tomorrow is the cutoff point where no changing divisions, no more, that's it, no more refunds, nothing, this is it. And then that gives me approximately 10 days to kind of put everything into perspective and say, right, we have this many people in this division, that means that many people get prizes and this is what they can expect, and it's a bit difficult to kind of do that beforehand when there's all these changes, but what can you expect? You can expect roughly top 25% in each division will get prizes. What they are will be confirmed by email and on the website. We will be playing a modified layout, which is significantly more challenging than the standard regular layout that we have at Horsten and Hill. The regular layout, there's no out of bounds, there's no manners, no hazards. It's just free for all, very simple, short play, short course. With the Wembley Open, there's some extended tee pads, and there's basically OB, left, right, and long on every single hole.
Nice.
So if you're off the fairway, you're OB. Simple as that. And I'm hoping to make it crystal clear by painting some lines on the grass this weekend, and hopefully Thursday and Friday, if I haven't finished it all by then. So I'll be repainting all the grass to make OB lines. And again, some of them will be really harsh, and that's kind of the idea, because generally speaking, the course is very easy. And the events we're going to have in May, on the 15th and 29th of May, will be just the standard regular layout with nothing. So we can kind of see a comparison between the Wembley layout, which is really harsh and really more difficult, versus the standard layout that's really, really easy. And it's been really exciting to see the people who have signed up in the events have been majority MA3 and MA4 players. Now, granted, I haven't had that many divisions available, but that seems to be where the majority of the player base are, so I think that more people will appreciate the easier layout than the difficult layout. So, and I think the open players probably won't come to the regular one-day events because it'll be quote-unquote too easy, But that's absolutely fine, because that's not really going to be my target audience. It's the pros. I'll have an MPO division available, but it's not really going to be my primary focus to focus on the pro players at, this year anyway. Back to the Wembley Open. We'll have a modified layout. It's going to be a lot difficult. It'll be tee times. So we'll be starting from roughly, 8:30, I think. And then every 10 minutes, a group of four will be teeing off from hole one every 10 minutes. All this information is available on our website as well. So check that out. Just go to events. It's www.discgolf.london. Really easy.
Are you playing that, Roy, as well?
I was, but the date changed and I couldn't get the day off work. Oh. So the reserve spot that you got was actually offered to me first.
I don't want it now. If I'm second best.
Second choice, Duffy. Second choice.
So that's kind of the opposite of what happened with Dennis and Max.
What's that?
I got in super early with it, so it was supposed to be my first tournament. I was super excited, but fucking COVID sucks. So
sure does.
Yes, it does. But again, from a business point of view, COVID's the best thing that ever happened to disc golf, especially here in the UK, which is amazing. One last question, guys. This is for both of you. It's going to be two kind of different perspectives, and we'll start with Ryan. What do you have in store for the rest of the year? I know your tournament schedule is based on your availability and your wife's permission, and get that. but like for you, so what are your goals? What do you hope to achieve this year by the end of the year? And then for Ollie, what's in store for everybody throughout the year? I know we talked about you want to run 10 tournaments, but are there any specific tournaments you want to talk about? Anything exciting? Use this time as your shout outs.
Well, goals for this year is just to get to as many tournaments as I can, do as well as I can hope, really. I wasn't lucky at Bedworth. The last hole on my round just did me in, so I've been a bit down since
that
one.
What number was it?
It was nine.
The long.
It was eight. It was the double Mander on eight.
Oh, okay.
Did me in. Did a lot of people in, I think. Just try and get as many tournaments in as I can. Try and get my rating just as high as I can as well. Hopefully progress to MA3 and beat all of you guys.
I think you're near enough in MA3 already, to be honest, Ryan. Honestly.
I have my good days.
Ryan, if it makes you feel any better, just remember that James Luden aced hole 8.
Yeah, that makes me feel better.
You need to throw your thumber on it, Ryan. Trust me, it's a thumber shot.
The thumber.
Every hole for Bowen is a thumber or a tomahawk.
It is now.
I know it's not very adventurous.
It's all about the forehand.
It's not very adventurous, but my plan for tournaments at Bedworth involves me laying up short of the Mando on that one.
I did that. Did that on my second round. It's definitely safer.
Take a par. It's not very, like I say, not very adventurous, but it's a safe play, isn't it?
Well, sometimes you...
It's boring,
it is, but sometimes you got to play smart golf, right? Because at the end of the day, we're playing golf, and you have to figure out what you have, what shots you're capable of, and it's fun. I'm really excited to play with, both of you and show you guys how much I suck. What about you? What about you, Ollie? What's the store for the store and you and everything?
Sure. Well, first of all, quick tip on the Wembley Open. If in doubt, throw your buzz. Simple as.
That's easy.
What's in store for London Disc Golf Community? Well, like we discussed already, I want to run my 10 events. I want to push disc golf locally. I'm realizing that the more you grow disc golf locally, the better. I mean, look at Scotland, they're pushing it locally. Look at Quarry Park, they're pushing it locally. Look at all the clubs, they're focusing locally, and that's working everywhere. So that's clearly the key. I'm doing a couple of kids' birthday parties with disc golf. I'm working with the scouts next month. And Horsten and Hill are really giving me lots of opportunity to work with disc golf. We're in the process of doing a deal with a famous YouTuber with more than 10 million followers to do something. And again, imagine if they throw a frisbee and 10 million people see that. I mean, that could be sick, right? So we hope that's going to go ahead. But yeah, I'm hoping to grow the shop, have more discs, have more manufacturers. Obviously, the more discs you have, the more space you need, and you've got to keep an eye on inventory. And then as you get more orders, you've got to have to keep a track of getting them all out to the right people. And so far, it's manageable, and I'm sure it'll be fine when I do it full time. But on top of everything else, it's get manic, and for that, it's going to get more and more and more. So if it just blows out of the water, I'm hoping to maybe even employ someone to help me with some of the orders. I know that Ace Disc Golf have got Adam McCrory to kind of just focus on customer experience and ordering. And again, if I could have someone like that fall on the disc golf community, that would probably be the dream. And then I can focus on pushing the brand forward, helping the team and creating content. I'm really enjoying the YouTube channel. So go subscribe to London Disc Golf Community on YouTube. I just put out two videos of the front nine and back nine of Horsenden Hill on the standard layout, but it'll give you some kind of idea. If you're playing the Wembley Open, it won't be the same layout, but it'll give you a rough idea of where you're going and what it looks like and what to expect, really. And I'm really enjoying those videos. It takes a lot of time to put that stuff together, but it's coming a lot more natural now. I started doing videos a year, 18 months ago, and you can really tell that I have come a long way. And so I'm really enjoying that. It just comes a lot more natural across on the camera. I did an unboxing video live on Facebook just before we got on live here.
I saw that.
I thought you were going to be late.
So did I. Yes, I think he was.
What the fuck's he doing that for?
I thought you might say that, guys. But
it's like you said, it's one of those things getting comfortable. I think we ourselves have, from our first episode to, oh, we're doing this, okay, to yeah, now. And, you know, we're only, this is episode 16. You know, we're still fresh, we're so young, but I think you can tell that we've progressed as well. We kind of have our flow and our rhythm. And I think with anything like that on social media and YouTube and trying to make content, you get better as you go.
Yeah.
I think there's initially, or at the beginning of this year, I was kind of struggling with, because I saw all these new podcasts come out. I'm like, oh, damn it, I wanted to do one of those. But again, it's easy to see what other people are doing and wanted to do that as well. But all these things, and you guys are doing it, so you know how much work it takes to put it all together and arrange, get people availability, and then book it in. And we're just sitting here talking for at least an hour, and then you've got to edit it, put it together, and upload it. And that's just your time. Then there's the money involved as well, whether it's setting it up initially or upgrading or subscriptions, whatever it is you guys pay for. And
there's a whole load of costs.
And it's a lot of costs and a lot of time. And we can argue that, yes, I run a business, and that time and energy is quote-unquote marketing costs, which is fair enough. But it takes a long time, and not everyone can do it as well. Like if you go and talk to yourself in front of the camera, you've got to feel really awkward and weird about it.
Yeah.
Like,
and that
takes a long time to get used to, and you just got to do it and not really care. And I find it, especially when I do my videos with other people on my vlog, you can tell that they're a bit camera shy or nervous and just because they're not used to it. And I think it's just, what's the word? It's not human nature to talk on camera. It's just really weird. But I'm getting into the rhythm now.
That's good. Like I personally, I've never listened to a show. And I know that sounds horrible, but I hate the sound of my own voice. I can't believe
everyone else.
Well, I know. That's why I can't believe we have listeners, because I sound so irritating. But it is. It's you're uncomfortable, and then you have to watch it and you have to edit it. So now you're hearing this and you notice all these mistakes, and you're trying to produce good quality and make the best you can. It's tough, but you know what? That's what we all signed up for. I think we all do this because we enjoy it so much, and we want to give back. And I think that's the biggest thing of in the community. We have people who love to play, and that's all they want to do. And that is great.
stay on that, be a player, yeah. Go to the events and have fun. And I think there's another core group of people here who love to play and the love for the game. Now they want to share it and spread it and make it grow. And I think having those two different sides is amazing.
I think one of the most rewarding things is to, I mean, you might argue this, but to be able to have a platform or a space, like you guys have your podcast, I've got my YouTube channel, and be able to have that for, say, someone might be honored to come on your podcast, or they might be honored to come on to the YouTube channel. And for me, it's a privilege to have them come on board, because it's more content for me. Yeah, and same for you guys, it's more content to have you guys on.
Now, we feel grateful that you guys and all the guests that we've had up to this point have said, yeah, we'd love to do the show. And that's blown us away.
And I think that's really great, is to be able to have multiple platforms where you can push things forward, and one will push the other. And I think that's great to see you guys supporting Harry Messenger and his charity auction, and vice versa. We guys coming on and supporting you guys, and you supporting us, and supporting doing all the interviews and getting people out there and just helping to create more content and awareness of the sport. I really appreciate that.
Well, we appreciate you guys coming on.
Yeah, definitely.
So thank you guys both for coming on. I can't wait to see you guys, meet everybody in person now that these restrictions have ended, and then start to really play rounds with you guys. So again, everybody, thank you so much for coming on, and can't wait to see you guys at Wembley.
Yeah.
Thanks very much.
Yeah. See you.
Thank you very much.
Cheers.
Awesome. Thanks, boys. That was a lot of fun. What did you guys think about that interview?
It's good. It's good. It's interesting to see what Ollie's got going on down London way.
Oh, he's got so much. I don't know how he can do it all. I have a hard enough time for the time that we have dedicated to this, plus work, plus playing disc golf. It's overwhelming at times.
Yeah,
I think he really enjoys it, though. This is the career choice for him, definitely.
I think so. And Ryan's a nice kid too. Loves disc golf. Pretty excited to see what he does this season.
Yeah,
I play with him every now and then, and he's a real nice lad. His missus, they're real nice.
Duffy and I play with his dad over the weekend, so that was fun.
Yeah, I like Craig. He's a good lad as well. To be fair, we're scored an ace the other week. Did he tell you about it?
I can't remember. I was.
You weren't listening, were you?
I was.
He did tell us about it, but
I was Dennis on my way to shooting 2 under. I wasn't really paying a lot of attention to much.
I shot a 2 under.
Yeah, no. I shot.
Be my friend, yeah. Josh.
I shot a 2 under when it didn't even matter.
Can I join Ace Disc now?
You guys are dicks. I hate you. I hate all of you. I hate you so much. You guys just make me lose my train of thought. So,
Jonesboro.
We're going to do our pick results.
Yes, I know. I was getting there. I was pausing. It was a dramatic pause. So,
okay. Yeah. I actually thought you'd lost it.
No, I didn't lose the plot. Well. I know exactly what I'm doing. That's why you guys pay me the big bucks. So, we always have our little bet on who's going to win the big tournaments and on the Pro Tour. And yeah, so this week we finally had a winner in the MPO division. So Duffy took it down. So we owe him
$45.
£45.
$45.
That Duffy is going to donate to what charity, Duffy?
It's going to get all serious now. I'm going to. It's a local hospice by me, Kemp Hospice. I lost my nan last year, and they did a lot with her before she died, and my granddad after she died. That's where the charity money's going. It's a really worthwhile cause. So.
That's really good.
That's good.
Hospices are small and they need as much money as they can get because they do a great job.
There you go. Glad to donate to a worthy cause then. So now what's going to happen is for the OTB Open, everything's going to reset. We're back at £15 and we'll see how well it accumulates from there on out.
When is the OTB?
May. Mid-May. May 16th. Okay. I think the same time.
I should know that.
You should as that. The news guy. I think it's the same weekend as the amateur at Quarry Park.
So it's the second most prestigious tournament of the weekend.
You might say that, yeah.
Something like that. Anyways, so this weekend we got Wembley. Duffy and I will be there. Bowen was going to be watching from the sidelines.
Hang on, we haven't talked about the women's pick.
Yeah, but the women's pick is a...
Don't skip over this, because I won both the MPO and the FPO.
I know, you won both.
And I am now, let me just figure it out.
You are in the lead.
I am now 80 points in the lead.
But
so you know,
but when it comes to the FPO...
Get those tattoo guns fired up.
No, it's not for both people, it's for the person at the very bottom.
Yeah, I know.
So that's not me. So I don't care.
30 points.
Well, yeah, so but come on.
Just to give everybody a look in, I'm on 260 points, Dennis on 180, Bowen on 150. And
because you two conspired together to work out a point system so that I lose. That's basically what it is.
Yeah, because I want you to say I want you to get a tattoo that says I love Villa.
That's something that would be off the table. Honestly, that would be off the table.
We haven't decided on the forfeits or punishments yet, have we?
We will. It's gonna be good. It's gonna be good.
Yeah.
Anyways, wow, we ran so over time, guys. If you see us on Saturday at Wembley, come say hi, and like always, remember. Keep it in the chains.
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 Thanks for listening to In the Chains. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. And if you like the show, please leave us a review. Until next time, keep it in the chains.